Welcome back to the pod, everybody. This is Rome. We have a full episode for you today. First, we recap F1, where Verstappen takes number one spot again. Now that's back-to-back wins in the last two races, as well as gaining a second place finish in the race prior. So lots of chatter about him gaining steam in the Drivers' Championship. Can he compete with the McLaren boys and make it interesting for the final races down the stretch? We will see, but we break it down for you, as well as some rumors in and around Formula One. We also recap the NFL week three. It was a wild, wild weekend. We update you on our against the spread competition, which is hilarious. We also give a new winner to Ass Beating of the Week. It's something that we started last week and we continue it this week. Jason's Bears took the honors in the inaugural award. So we'll see who wins it this week. Close games, tough losses, crazy blocked field goals. It was definitely a fun week, but we are ready to move on to week four. And then a few announcements. Be sure to check us out on YouTube. We have the full F1 clips on YouTube, as well as the lines. We'll be releasing weekly college football games of the week, as well as the NFL lines towards the end of the week, so you can gear up, get educated, and make your bets, make your picks, either on your favorite site or with your friends, family, whatever. We are hitting up on some big numbers here, so be sure to follow us. Also, be sure to rate us on Spotify or Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to our podcast. Go to YouTube, subscribe, give us a follow, share some love, man. We need a little bit of love here. It would be greatly appreciated. But without further ado, let's get into it. Yo, this is Source from the Sofa. We're going to talk a little F1 recap this past Sunday's race. A little bit of drama, start out with the crash. A lot of cars stuck in the middle. They couldn't pass anybody. It was just like no opportunities to do so. You got some comments at the end of the race. Verstappen, now people are talking about how he can make a move to try to catch up and possibly steal this driver's championship away from Piastri. I don't know how much you believe that, but there's lots of ammunition behind that. Jason, did you watch the race live since you had like a 2-hour advantage over us?
I did. You know, when you're in central time zone, it's only 6 a.m. So, you know, little bit of reprieve. So it was a good week to be back east and get the 6 a.m. start time still, even when I'm not in Pacific time zone. So yeah, rough 4 a.m. for you guys.
Wasn't up at 4 a.m., put the old record on and jumped on about 5:30, started it, and didn't check the messages because, you know, didn't want to get any stuff from Jason. So that's why I kind of commented late, but boom, you know, right off the bat. Kind of like my picks this week went right into the wall, lap one, and I just knew it was going to be a bad Sunday right off the bat.
I did catch the race live. I jumped in like at lap 15. My knee, I don't know if you guys know, is pretty jacked
Rome,
up.
Rome, what time do you go to bed, Rome? Because, I mean, there's some days, like on Sunday, you text us, you're in bed at 11, and then you text me and Jason like, hey, I just got home at 6 a.m., been an all-nighter. Like, what time do you go to bed?
With it being 4 a.m., I 100% say I watched it live because I was still up from Saturday night. I just went into watching the race.
Oh, really? The wedding?
No, I'm saying that's what I thought you were going to say. I wasn't up.
My daughter. No. Well, Sunday night, you know, I had to drive back down to L.A. to get her in time for pitcher day. So that's why we just, you know, hit the snooze at 9 o'clock. I had to wake up at 2:45. We had an earthquake. I was on the toilet. I thought it was a Little Caesars messing me up, but it was actually a real 4.0 earthquake that, you know, shocked the Bay Area. But yeah, I was up because my knees jacked. The pain shooting up my side and my hip. And I was like, screw it. Might as well just watch a little F1. But I caught it from, I think it was lap 12 or something like that.
Yeah, good well, stuff. I mean, the drama definitely was on Sunday with the Piastri crash to open. But, I mean, the drama was even before that during qualifying for, you know, where these guys were even starting because of the several crashes that happened during the qualifying, which, you know, led to Piastri and Norris and, you know, some of these other guys lower in the field. And then there was weather during that. And so you had an interesting starting grid with, like, you know, Carlos Sainz, you know, being, you know, second in qualifying and, you know, a couple other cars, like Liam Lawson, you know, was up there at the top of the grid out of qualifying. So it was an interesting starting point, especially we were used to such a season with both McLarens being at the top of the grid just from qualifying going forward. It's a 1-2 kind of punch where neither of these guys were near the front the entire weekend. And, you know, just seemed to be just real problems overall with the car. You might have found kind of the tracks that McLaren just isn't as dominant where, you know, and this may have been a little more known, like on the high speed turn tracks, that's where McLaren has cleaned up. But when you have, you know, these big, you know, long straightaways that, you know, Red Bull can cut the wing down a little bit. This is where Verstappen and the Red Bull car has kind of thrived when you looked at, you know, the race in Italy and this race this last weekend, which is kind of the massive, you know, big stretch from the final turn all the way to turn one that happens in Azerbaijan. So it was overall, it looked like 2023 with Verstappen where started on the pole, dominated it. You never saw his car once in the broadcast until really the race. Until the
not
race.
A lot. Yeah,
until the race ended.
I think his radio team was just like, hey, you got good pace, keep it up. Like every like 20 laps, he would just be like, hey, you're doing a great job, just keep going. You're doing great. Like that was it.
And it's not an easy track. I mean, I wish we had Andrew on the pod. You talk about racing this track on the F1 video game on
tough.
The PlayStation. Dude, it's a hard track with the amount of like high speed corners through the city. You go to the castle section where it's like it's a narrow like one lane left, right, like that, like basically bends that's got room for one car only. And you got to be able to maintain speed kind of going uphill doing that. And so when you look at the crashes throughout the weekend, like it's a small margin from error from a very tight track and the overall ways to pass, given the long stretch, I said down to turn one, when you're coming into that, even wasn't even making it to, when in DRS have the ability to pass on this track. So, I mean, that's where you looked at Lando after Piastri goes out. I'm like, okay, this is the race. This is what Lando needs to like take back the points. Like how many can he get? Can he get into top three and get like a 15 points on him? Can he get to fourth or something like that? And when he only gets up to seventh position, only gets 6 points on Piastri. Like it was best case scenario for Oscar where he had the early exit, but he really didn't lose like a whole, you know, a whole
not
race
too much,
worth of,
no.
Yeah. Compared to when, you know, Lando's motor blew, you know, Oscar got the win and it was a 25 point swing of what happened. This one, Oscar's out. It's only a 6 point swing. You didn't get everything you needed. The question mark going into, and I'll be honest with him, I didn't look at the news. Does Oscar have a penalty to serve in the next race in Singapore because he never served the penalty for his false start at the start of the race in Baku?
That's and coming so, for sure.
Yeah, and so you expect a grid place penalty for him in Singapore. Is it severe enough where Lando can have a couple point swing in the finishing spot? But ultimately, I think it's a disappointment. McLaren botched another Lando pit stop that basically cost him probably
from fifth to seventh, because that's when Tsunoda and Lawson, I think, passed him up and. What they added like one extra 4 seconds, and he was stuck behind those two cars. It was like a 4-car jam, like what, like the last 10 laps, and there was just no opportunity to pass. I think one time he had a chance to pass, his car just could not pick up speed, and like that was it.
Yeah, had the one run, and so it was a 4-point swing basically where it was at that McLaren took him away, that took it away from Lando, and so it's been unfortunate, but he really needed more out of that. And Verstappen making competitive, I think that's the storyline out of it. When you look at where Singapore, I don't think the Red Bull would be very strong. You've seen that Red Bull car struggle there before, even in the dominant 2023. Singapore was the only race that year that Red Bull didn't win. That was the Carlos Sainz win, where Red Bull won 22 out of 23 races that year, and Singapore was the lone one. But it's a difficult track, man. It's gonna be like 130 degrees or something, you know, while they're racing at night out there in Singapore. And so it's an endurance test for drivers. But I don't think has the long speeds that the Red Bull car would be good. You may look at tracks like Vegas. That's going to be a big like Max night, or, you know, other ones. I'm trying to think of the remaining tick. Maybe potentially Mexico, that's got like a, you know, a couple of big long stretches in there. The Red Bull car can be great, but I don't know. You know, there's just, we were talking, it's going to be impossible for Lando to overtake Oscar. I think it's even a longer shot for Max to overtake both of them. Now, is Lando in the shot for Max to get second? Maybe, but for Max, that's a who cares. I don't care about finishing second in the Drivers' Championship. I think we're still talking about the two Red Bull, the two McLaren drivers for 1-2.
Yeah, Sainz picking up third in this race. I guess that was the first one for Williams.
First one this year, first one in a very long time. You know, Williams is like a, you know, one of the legacy F1 teams. You know, we get like a world champions. You know, they were big in the 80s and 90s for what Williams were, but you know, haven't been relevant much in the past 20 years. But yeah, huge for them when you look at what this team has been doing under James Vowles, who, you know, had tons of success in the different engineering departments at Mercedes, goes to Williams as team principal. Williams is bought by, you know, American venture capitalist type thing, and a ton of money's put into this program. And they've nice. they've gotten nothing but better. And this podium kind of almost locks them into the fifth seed, which they were, you know, the halfway point. We were talking in that season second half preview, we're like, you know, is somebody going to catch up to them? They weren't as dominant, but now, you know, they're probably much locked in at that fifth place.
Yeah, they got a 29 point lead right now,
which is significant when you're talking about, and these are two cars still battling. And you know, it's been weird who gets points in the top 10 with, you know, only one Red Bull kind of guarantee, both McLarens to a degree, both Mercedes, but there's been a lot of points available, like 8, 9, 10, a lot every week. And so when you get some shuffles in this where some, you know, rain happens or different things in qualifying, they give you some different orders. And now just in the last year of regulation, making it very difficult to pass. Hey, Sainz is able to qualify second and pretty much hold off everybody except George Russell to get the podium. Same thing for Liam Lawson in that race too. You know, he qualified up, I believe he was in third, held off pretty much for the most part, the good challengers race behind them. Yeah. For him, you know, it was a great result for him. We're now, you know, the questions in the Red Bull senior team and junior team, they got Lindblad, who's kind of like, I don't know, your next prodigy driver coming out of the Red Bull farm system that probably would be the next driver next year. So whether it's Tsunoda, Lawson, or Hajar, someone's potentially losing their seat. A lot of people that Hajar has done a great job this year, and it was between Lawson and Tsunoda, and Lawson maybe being the odd man out, but I think he's done enough here potentially.
Tsunoda looks like he's on his way out. He hasn't shown me anything here in the last couple months.
I'd agree with you. I think what they're saying is because with Laurent Mekies taking over as team principal, and he went working with Tsunoda at the Racing Bulls previously, you know, is he giving him the better setup to get a better fair assessment? But I don't disagree with you, Aaron. I think the likely scenario is you see Hajar, you know, replace him at the Red Bull senior team, and you'll have Lawson stay on the Racing Bulls team with Lindblad next year.
I'd agree with that.
I thought they announced that Verstappen was definitely getting a new teammate for next year, but I guess that's for somebody else.
They just announced that Verstappen was going to be back himself last year, but they haven't said anything as far as like what the driver lineup was going to be. I think, not all the teams have secure driver lineups for the most part. Like even Mercedes, I'm pretty sure they haven't even signed George Russell to an extension yet. Have been non-committal on what Kimi Antonelli's under contract with Mercedes, whether he's going to keep the seat next year or they want to do something more aggressive in the first year of the new regulation that Mercedes is supposed to have, you know, the upper hand in the early rounds of this new reg set in 2026. So there's still some driver shuffling, I think, going on behind the scenes of what's going to happen. I'd expect a lot of it to stay the same on Mercedes, but I think the Red Bull spot will be very interesting.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that, Jason. I don't see George Russell leaving Mercedes. I mean, he just got second here on this podium. He's been good. I think it was a couple of weeks ago, there was mentions that a deal was done, just finalizing some, you know, couple things here and there. So I would expect him to be there. Kimi Antonelli, that's another story, whether or not they want to do with him. Would he get fourth at this race, I believe? So they had a good race this week in Mercedes. So
yeah.
It was a good race for them. So we'll see what happens. But yeah, I don't see Russell leaving there.
I agree with you, Aaron. I think Toto Wolff just has this thing that he really wants Verstappen. And so I think this entire contract negotiation probably is going to be like, I'm not getting Verstappen next year, but I want George next year. But if Verstappen comes up in 2027, what's my escape clause or what's my flexibility to get out of the Russell contract and sign Verstappen? I think that this literally probably the only thing holding it up, given how much Toto Wolff's been public about how much he wanted Verstappen back when he was a junior. And then kind of the flirting they did during the break and going to like off to an island.
You said they were in Italy, right? You said they met up in Italy. You
know, yeah, it was an island off of Italy or something like that. And so I think that buzz is going to be there. And so I F1 contracts sometimes to me feel like NFL contracts where they're just like, they're kind of made to be broken type thing. You're just going to get fired at any point.
But a bunch of out causes.
Right. And so I'm guessing that's the finalized person where you're George Russell, man. You're like, hey, like I've been holding it down for this team right now. I'm having a really good year for a car that's not great. I mean, it's only great when
it's cold. The weather,
it's cold out. It's basically the buzz on that. So George has basically done what he can, and he went toe to toe with Lewis Hamilton and wasn't in what was Mercedes' probably worst car in over a decade during that run. So yeah. And for the most part, like, are you going to get rid of George for what next year if you don't sign him? Like, I think George would be a pretty hot commodity on the market that, you know, there'll be some teams interested in him that, you know, do have some money freeing up that can, you know, be signing him too. I don't know. Maybe there's not a spot in 2026, but as contracts come through and you see where teams are at, you know, does Aston Martin, does Red Bull, does like some of these other people, like George is like appreciated by his peers in a lot of areas where he's this guy that just hasn't had the car, but if he has the dominant car, he's going to win.
George Russell's good, man. And I think we talked about this before, guys, that, you know, I could see if Verstappen Russell kind of just swap, you know, like a trade, you know? So these two, I mean, Verstappen seems pretty happy at Red Bull now that, you know, Horner's gone. He's won a couple races. He seems happy, not really hearing any chatter about him, maybe looking for an exit. He said he planned all along to return in 26. I mean, what would it take, Jason, for Verstappen not to want to come back, say, in 27? Would it have to be not being able to compete for another, you know, driver's championship? Would that be something that would basically say, hey, it's time for me to move on? We're not competitive enough to win. Or is he at Red Bull for, you know, I don't know what his contract is, a 2028, 2030, whatever it is. Is he going to stay there for that whole thing, or is he just going to be like, hey, look, I gave you guys another chance. Horner's gone. We're still not competitive enough, so I'm going to jump ship and go to Mercedes or whoever signs him.
The long-running rumor has just been like, what does this 2026 car look like? Because if he can truly opt out at the end of 26 – and he's able to get a good look on what all 10 teams have been able to do in the new reg, you know, sets, what engine is out there. You know, Red Bull's doing a new engine program with Ford. And so he does no longer has the Honda engine next year. What's this engine going to look like? You know, what's the design kind of look like that doesn't have, you know, kind of the history of there. So I think there's a ton of unknowns with the Red Bull car next year where like, if this thing's come out, it's just crap. Hey, I'm out of here. Does Mercedes have the car? Aston Martin, I brought this up before, where he's got Adrian Newey, who designed the Red Bull car for, you know, the Vettel and Verstappen, runs at Red Bull. He's over at Aston Martin designing this car now. And now Aston Martin has the Honda engines starting next year, too. Is that an enticing thing where, you know, there? So I think, Aaron, to answer your question, what does the 2026 car look like? I think there's a lot of contracts that go through 26 where, depending where the constructors are at, we'll make informed decisions of the drivers of where they want the job. I think Ferrari is another one because it's a prove it year for my guy, Lewis Hamilton, next year, because I think his contract only goes through 2026. And so a lot of people are talking like, is he worth kind of what is that? Because we haven't seen the production from Lewis. You know, if the Ferrari's great and Lewis is great, he's on the pace for an eighth world championship. If he ain't feeling the Ferrari next year, what's it going to be in 2027?
Does he retire if he has another season like this?
Potentially. I don't know, you know, what's going to be his options. He kind of went to this is the dream ride. Fernando Alonso has talked about, like, potentially retiring too. You know, because he's in his 40s. So there's a lot of buzz, and I think 26 is the prove it year from the constructor to the driver market. I'm like, you know, what car do I want to be in? There's a Ayrton Senna documentary. It wasn't a documentary. It was an Ayrton Senna like mini series they did on Netflix that came out last year. I'll say not the easiest watch because the whole thing's in like three or four different languages, but I think it was well put together. And there was a kind of a quote in that when Senna left McLaren and went to Williams because Williams had the better car. And like Ron Dennis used to run McLaren, was basically like, you know, the fastest driver always wants the fastest car. And so I think that's where you're going to start getting the evaluation of the drivers next year in that market. Like, hey, what manufacturer's putting this car out that is going to compete for a world championship? And is that Red Bull for Verstappen? I don't know.
To circle back to the Constructors Championship, you guys mentioning like Williams now like set like in five. Anything could change from two to four. It's like separated by like if anyone has like a good race. I know Ferrari's been pretty consistent just getting like 4 to 8, but Red Bull Racing, if Verstappen picks up another victory too, are they sitting like number two in the Constructors? Mercedes, who knows what Russell does throughout the year. There can still be a lot of change in
basically Rome. Those standings look like our baseball league standings. Like anywhere from two to four could just change, but really? Everything else is pretty much set in stone.
I think Racing Bulls can still catch it with Williams for fifth. It's just like, you know, a couple races that are good that separates them.
What would change the tide when you had last year? You had Alpine with Esteban Ocon and Pierre Gasly like get a podium, two podiums for Alpine in Brazil because of like a wild strategy during the rain race in Brazil.
Oh, yeah.
Like, a thing like that where like all of a sudden like Alpine was dead last all year, but then they get, what is it, like 32 points in one race because they put two drivers in the podium. Like those would be one of the swings you'd look for. Like, and it'd be one of these like it'd be like Brazil or Mexico that have like just some insane weather conditions down the stretch that I think that's where you'd be looking at, where like a Racing Bulls like jumps Williams or even somebody like Haas like jumps up to seventh or something because they put two guys in like significant position on like maybe a podium or something else.
Well, because I'm also looking at the drivers too, like Racing Bulls, Lawson and Hadjar, not too far away, 39 and 30 points, respectively, been pretty consistent throughout the year, or maybe not consistent, but at least Lawson, when he's done well, he's done well. And then you look at Williams, it's Albon carrying most of the weight, 70 points, and Sainz finally came through where he got a majority of his points here, and he's there at 31. One win or like one podium can change a lot of things. I didn't realize like how impactful a podium can be for a team and for a driver, really.
Yeah, I mean, when the point system is what it is, where it's only, you know, your top 10, it doesn't matter when you finish 11th through, you know, 20th. I mean, there was poor Ollie Bearman over there that finished like 11th, like four races in a row, got no points, but like
that's,
he's basically
crazy,
the same as his 20th. Yeah, I mean, so it's a different point situation. I think there's a lot, yeah, of talk of like later on that he points all the way down to like 15th place or something like that, where it, you know, it puts more into like, into having quality different finishes in some of these lower tier stuff, and it kind of shakes up what the constructors could be, because even now more points are allocated when you look at some of the, like, it used to be like top five were the only people that got points, like,
oh, really?
Back in the day. Yeah, so if you look at like the 1970s championship, like guys like missed like four or five races and like it didn't matter because like it's the same as finishing like sixth. So
crazy.
But yeah, I think There'll probably be some surprises, I think, down the stretch. Like I said, there's going to be some rain races. Vegas could be interesting because, as Aaron was talking about, Mercedes is good in the cold, you know, so does that change some things? But it was a big, going back to the science point, huge win for him because there was a contingent among many, was Sainz the right driver to get displaced at Ferrari for Lewis Hamilton? And then because Hamilton struggles this year, it's like, oh, we got rid of Sainz and Hamilton hasn't done anything, even though Hamilton's sixth in the driver's championship right now. But like, he hasn't delivered, obviously, what you're expecting a seven-time world champion to do. But Sainz, at the same time, has gotten beat by Albon the entire year up until this race, where you haven't seen you know, hey, this guy was in Ferrari these past couple of years and had won some races and had all these great finishes. But when he's in a Williams car and he's not beating his peer any significantly lower than him in the standings, there was questions about Sainz. So I think it was a big win, you know, not win, but big podium for him, because it proved like what he can do with this car, where this Williams car is at. And so I expect you could potentially get more of these like bottom top 10 finishes out of Sainz and Albon throughout the year, as like kind of we reach like the ending point of this season. But you get a very big mix of tracks as you go to, you know, you finish in Singapore and you start doing all these North American tracks down like a stretch. It'll be interesting. There's a lot of good McLaren track set up, but then I think there's some stuff with the Mercedes and Red Bulls will be pretty good too.
Yeah, we got Singapore next in a couple weeks. Is that 2 weeks for now?
Yeah, October 3rd and through the 5th.
Nice 5 a.m. race. Then after that is the Circuit of Americas.
That's in Texas, man.
Austin.
That's in Austin.
Oh, that's what Andrew was telling me about. He's trying to make it out to that one.
That's a big one. Definitely one I want to get to one day. Won't be able to do it this year, but I think that is seen out of the three American tracks. That is the like race to kind of go to. It's a circuit track, not a street track like Miami and Vegas. And there's just some good racing that goes on at that track. So I think that's a good race that I would recommend going to. But yeah, you go there. You go to Brazil and Mexico, back up to Vegas. You know, a good stretch in, you know, four straight North American races, or North and South America, I should say.
Yeah, before they head back to the Middle East.
Yep,
Qatar and Abu Dhabi. Awesome, man. We'll try to get Andrew on the next one, on the pod, either before or after. We'll see what happens, but.
It seems like he's brushing up on his Spanish for that Mexico City race. It sounds like, Rome.
Sounds like he's doing something. Yeah. Maybe he's dyeing his hair again.
Maybe we tell him instead of Circuit of the Americas, he heads down to Mexico City. I mean, it's a big race, you know.
Dude, I love Mexico City. It's like one of my favorite cities in the world. It's absolutely beautiful. It reminds me of Europe. It's kind of like San Francisco, but in Mexico, just jungly. Good food, good restaurants, beautiful women, great alcohol, great bars. It's good vibes. Very dangerous, though. Very fucking dangerous. You have to be very careful where you end up in the city, but it's a great city.
Well, I haven't been there, but I'll say just on overall TV and just what you know about the track out there, I think it's one of the better F1 tracks. Got some cool views when you go throughout that track, where there's a stadium section of the track as it goes to before the final turn, big long straightaway. Some interesting racing that can go on that, you know, sets up for a lot of good overtakes.
You know what? That'll be a good one to plan for next year, because I have so many connections in Mexico City. We can eat at some of the best Michelin restaurants and get hooked up fat in Mexico City. It'd be no shortage of partying, and that'd be pretty fun. That'd be a fun race. Think about it, guys. Just throwing it out.
Well, I mean, the food I'm sure is great, but you know, we're getting a little older here, Rome. You know, I start considering like, you know, Pepto-Bismol, Tums, you know, different antacids and different things you got to take. So, you know, just.
Oh, the restaurants will give it to you too, man. They know. Well,
that's the dangerous part about traveling overall. It doesn't matter if it's in Mexico or just anywhere here in the United States, you know. You don't bounce back like you used to.
That's 100%, man.
You were just talking about the Little Caesars. You're giving up earthquakes up there in San Francisco because of a Little Caesars. I don't know if you should be going down, you know, in Mexico.
Here's one thing about Little Caesars, man. I've said how much I love that pizza. It's really good. I think it's one of the best pizzas out there, especially the price bracket it's in. Every time I order delivery, which has only been three times now, it's been not as good as if I drive up. I hand cold hard cash for the hot and ready for $5 or whatever it is. Add the crazy bread, extra crazy.
I mean, the hot and ready is the staple, but the crazy bread. What's Rome doing over here? You know, he's just talking about Pizza Hut and then disappears off the mic. Yeah. A Little Caesar, sorry.
He's got Little Caesars over there he's playing with or something. I don't know.
I was going to bring out some Little Caesars and have like a little victory. Like, you guys said that the Detroit Lions were going to be last place, that they were done. And look at them, back-to-back, blowout, dominating victories.
It's Dan Campbell.
Oh, you guys definitely said last place. All right, that'll do it. F1 in the books. Welcome back to Sources from the Sofa. We got the full crew tonight, Jason and Aaron. We're recording Tuesday night, a little later than when we usually record. Typically, it's been like Sunday for this year. But pretty eventful week 3 in the books. And it ended on a big bang. Monday night was fun, dude. It was fun, mainly because I had the Lions winning, had them covering. It was really great. Sunday night was god awful. It was unbearable to watch Chiefs and Giants. It was like the first half was just really rough. And then there was just like a whole bunch of upsets and weird things that just happened. It seemed like everyone that was gambling this week just took like a lot of big L's on like every platform, every radio show, podcast. So on the bright side, though, we've been pretty consistent, guys. We've been batting like basically 500 the whole way every week, no matter what, whether it's a good week or a bad week. This week was a bad weekend. We kind of just had the same results. Against the spread, we'll update it. Week 3, I think it's out on the socials. I had my first winning week at 8-7. And so that brings me tied with Jason now for the year at 21-24. Me and you, Jason, we had the tiebreaker for the Lions Ravens game yesterday, and Aaron was 6-9. I was 6-9 the first week. You were in 6-9 last week, Jason, and now it's Aaron's turn to be 6-9. Maybe we can end the 6-9 curse. But tight contest for against the spread. Pretty fun.
Well, that's what happens when we pick every game. You know, Rome, we made a commitment this year. We weren't going to have any stay away games. You're going to have a take on which game you want to put some entertainment purposes only credits on. You know, we're just providing you analysis on each game, whichever you want to decide to do. And so, yeah, a lot of interesting things. I'll be honest. I was at Soldier Field this weekend, yeah, which I'm sure you guys may have recapped in an episode or two. So, you know, getting into Soldier Field in the afternoon's slate of games, and you know, the morning games are going on, and just, you know, wild things are happening. Like as you're just kind of taking in the stadium, and they got the red zone on at Soldier Field, and you're looking at some of these scores and what's going on. And then pre-games or warm-ups are happening, and all of a sudden, you know, every game they're talking about a field goal getting blocked, and I'm like, no, I'm talking about this game. They're like, no, like 3 other games a field goal was blocked in, and who knows what's going on with spreads and things happening. I mean, there was some bad beats with, I think, a lot of gamblers, especially if you're looking at that Eagles game, man, because you're thinking, you're sitting pretty if you're the Rams one way or the other. Like, the Rams are winning, the Eagles are not covering, and then all of a sudden, hey, it's time expired, we're going to block a field goal, and one of the big fellas is going to take it 70 yards or something the other way to cover the spread and win the game.
Yeah, a lot of people are like on social were saying like, it's because gambling is so prominent now, and they're saying the Eagles knew that, that's why they took it to the house instead of, he should just like kneel down. I'm like, dude, that's kind of dumb, dude. Like that guy's, if not ever going to score a touchdown again, like he had to run into the house. But I was really happy though.
It's such a dumb take for people to say that. It's a natural instinct. Like when you're in these positions, man, I get the ball, I'm going to score. Like how many times does a defensive lineman like have the opportunity to be able to score a touchdown, especially like that? Like you're talking like a moment. Like you get into, I'm not trying to think about the you know, big moments in the playoffs where a running back like goes down to like waste the clock versus running in for a touchdown. And like that's always like a big deal because, man, you have a sixth sense of like scoop and score or get the ball running in for a touchdown, not just like lay down to like waste clock. And in those moments, like, you know, the game's happening so fast and you're thinking about one thing. It's just you're trying to score in every which way.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, unless it's the end of the game, like Jason mentioned, and you're told before the play, like, hey, like make sure you stay in bounds and don't score, you're not thinking about it. I mean, that block kick there by Davis, the ball bounces perfect to him while he's in stride, nothing but green grass. He's not sitting there like, oh, wow, we were only up by 1 and we're favored by 3.5. Let me go and score. It's just like, wow, I just blocked the kick. I got the ball and all I see is the end zone ahead of me. And you just run, you just do it.
Yeah, there's an old one of my favorite Bears highlights. I think it was the 2001 season. The Bears were playing kind of I think it was the makeup game from September 11th, and they're playing the Jags, and like big old Ted Washington and Keith Trailer. They were like 300 plus pound defensive linemen for the Bears. And I think it was Ted Washington, like went the other way. And like when I think it was an interception, he actually tipped the ball to himself and got an interception, and he's running down the field, and like Urlacher and Mike Brown and all these guys are like blocking, and he's trying to hand the ball off the entire time. Like, no, and they're just like, run, run, run. Like, you know, it's great moments, but I mean, you're trying to go like, you had a nose to the end zone, no matter which player you are in the field, whether you're defensive back, linebacker, and you're oral lineman, you know?
True, true, man. Let's break down the games. Jason, you have been on fire in the afternoon games, at least doing a lot better than me and Aaron. So congrats to you. Not so much the morning games, but then you go like on this nice little winning streak. It's really cool to see.
I guess you're telling everyone, fade me for the 10 a.m. slate, but 1 p.m., that's where you take my advice.
Yeah, you know, like if we're going like top down, I think like me and Aaron always go like two or three games in a row, like we might lose. You'll hit a four or five game losing streak in the morning, and I'm just like, what? And I just don't get it. Cause I could have sworn like you have like a lot of picks that match Aaron's, but whatever you fade him, it's just like the wrong way, or like he fades you the wrong way, and it's just fucking hilarious to see. It's happened now back-to-back weeks, but we're just all a game apart on the contest. So we'll see what week four brings in. A lot of good matchups. But let's talk about week three, man, because pretty exciting. I'm going to release my new power rankings going to week four later on the pod. And this one was kind of tough because I didn't know how far to drop people down, how far to raise a few teams up. But we had a few blowouts. We had I don't know if you guys listened to the pod, the final version, but we had an ass kicking of the week. And I would like to continue that every single week where it's an ass whooping of the week. And we pick a team that just got their ass beat. It was the Bears last week against the Detroit Lions. They won that award. And then Aaron debuted.
This one's easy this week, Rome.
And then Aaron debuted his bottom five, Jason, while you were in Chicago. So I'm pretty sure he'll do that again. But any candidates for the ass beating of the week for this week?
Bengals.
I was at the Bengals. Yeah, that game was just that was one of the ones I lost bad, and I did not see Carson Wentz coming through and just completely destroy. I mean, we knew the Bengals defense was bad, but man, that was just a bad.
Not only that, I mean, the Bengals gave him what 14 points. Spotted him by just throwing pick sixes, fumble recoveries.
Yeah, so. Defense came in huge, man.
Yeah, that was a rough one.
Yeah, Justin Jefferson only like five catches for 75 yards, and they scored 48 points. So, you know, just, yeah, that was bad. Like, as much as we are giving the Bengals credit for the 2-0 start, and hey, they're going to get off to the right start, man, that doesn't look good for if Burrow's going to be out for the next 2 months or whatever it is.
It didn't look good. And then I kind of feel bad because you got Jefferson on one side with the Vikings, and you have Chase on the Bengals, former LSU teammates. Two of the best receivers in the league just stuck in really tough situations. It's kind of rough, man, if you drafted them in fantasy. But on the plus side, though, I did start Jordan Mason. He killed it. That was the only bright spot. Actually, I had a pretty good year or week in fantasy. But Carson Wentz, good game. I thought he played pretty decent. A couple touchdowns, pretty solid. I think I called it that their coach likes veteran quarterbacks. And there's like a stat that was floating out that he does well with ginger quarterbacks.
I did see that too, Rome. I did see that out there too. Yeah. No, credit to that game. Aaron already brought it up with the defensive performance. And if you looked at the win versus the Bears, and then now this win versus the Vikings, the Brian Flores defense, you know, no matter what's going offensively, and it's a team that has a lot of offensive talent, and we're still kind of learning what this quarterback situation is going to be with Kevin O'Connell. And he's got, you know, he does well with getting the most of his guys, but the defense is going to hold them, you know, in games. And that's really what all the one score victories they had last season. I think some of that mattered, and it put him ahead here where, hey, you could put the backup quarterback in. Carson Wentz didn't have anything to do crazy. You could rely on the running game with Jordan Mason. I think Jordan Mason, if you're the fantasy watcher, that was a guy that a lot of people thought, hey, he's going to overtake Aaron Jones for the starting job. I don't think it was the way you know, obviously there's an injury with Aaron Jones, but you know, he steps in and does a big job. And I don't know if he gives the, you know, he may get the lion's share of the carries even with Aaron Jones coming back.
Yeah, Rome. I mean, we mentioned the Bengals ass whipping of the week. You got to throw the Saints in there too. I mean, that game was basically over in the first quarter.
Yeah, well, done so, man. That, I
was what 21 nothing first quarter. I mean, the Saints down. What were they down, like 44-3 at one point?
It was pretty bad. I had it on the. They were in one of the four games I was initially watching, but I was switching it basically between six games, and then I finally saw the score. I think it's second quarter. I could have sworn it was 28-0 or 28-3 or something like that. It was pretty bad. Sam Darnold, though, he's looked pretty solid so far this year as well in his new home, starting to get more adjusted. Spencer Rattler has lost every game of his career. I guess he's in the running for, like, worst start ever.
Well, we mentioned it, I think, you know, before in our season preview that the Saints do not have a quarterback on their roster via starting victory. That has got a victory as a starting quarterback. Zero.
That's crazy.
And that's crazy. That looks like it's going to stay true as they travel to Buffalo this upcoming weekend to play against one of arguably the best teams right now in the NFL. So the Saints, it's going to be a rough one. I think I mentioned there's a possibility they could go 0-17. It's realistic chance. I don't think it happens, but it's being floated out there.
If they were to get a win, though, when does it come? They got the Bills coming up. They're in Buffalo. They got the New York Giants coming in the week after. They got the Patriots after that. Then they go to Chicago to play the Bears, Soldier Field. Then they got the Bucks. They go to LA with the Rams. Panthers after that. Falcons. Dolphins.
Yeah. I mean, they're
could
three
get a
best
couple
chances.
Victories.
Their three best chances, I guess you would say, would be the Giants, Carolina, and the Jets. Those are all home games.
Yeah. Fair.
I mean, they played somewhat competitive here at home, right? They lost both games by one score at home. So
That's true.
I don't know how good really Arizona and the Niners are, because the Niners were really banged up in that game, and Arizona's offensively not very good right now, but we'll see. I think Buffalo's just can bring their C team and beat them on Sunday.
That Giants game, probably you're circling here in 2 weeks, because you know their Giants are making the change of quarterback this week.
Yeah,
and so that could go one of two ways. That's the rookie quarterback trying to do too much, and it's turnovers, and it turns away for the Saints. So I think you're looking at that, and the Patriots at home too. Like, I mean, the Patriots are better, but like you said, New Orleans is a tough place to play. It's a weird atmosphere down there. So I think there's some winnable games, but I think definitely those two coming up for the Giants and Patriots would be, hey, you can win two out of that. And then, you know, late in the season, you know, who knows when you got like the Jets and, you know, the showdown, the Titans game, honestly, may be like, who's getting the first overall pick?
Yeah, I don't know what to think of the Pats yet right now. That's really rough. Giants, who knows? Aaron, you were just a week off on calling that. I think you said Russell was done after week one. He came and blew people out of the water in week two.
Jason will tell you, everybody looks good against that Cowboys defense. So,
dude, apparently,
hold the parade before you start crowning guys MVP, man. Because Russell Wilson came into week three leading the league in passing, and now he's sitting on the bench watching with us.
Jason got something to say here. Hey,
listen, that Cowboys defense is
Caleb, but
you know, it's an impressive. It's hard to do something against that Cowboys defense, and it's an impressive unit. You know, any quarterback who goes up, you know, the Matt Eberflus led defense in Dallas.
Dude,
you know,
it's something to behold. Yeah, I totally forgot he was our D coordinator. Like, it's so fitting. It's so fitting that, you know, for him to get his ass beat.
Yeah, I mean, touching on the Saints real quick, it'll be interesting to see if they lose again and go to 0-4. Do they even make the switch to the rookie quarterback that they took as well? Give him
a
chance
again.
So it's the guy they drafted out of Louisville, like 26 years old, right?
Yeah. I just can't remember his name right now.
Yeah, I can't remember his name.
Tyler, is it Show?
Something like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
So he's like 26, so it'll be interesting to see if they decide to go to him, you know, rookie versus rookie, kind of in dart versus him if they get blown out and look bad again here against Buffalo.
Yeah. Another ass whooping, guys. We totally left it out. Panthers screwing up my picks this week, destroying the Falcons. I picked up the Falcons D, and they had no D this week in Carolina. That was a shellacking, a no-show by everybody. Michael Penix Jr. Benched at the end of that game, two interceptions, 18 for 36 yards, 150 yards. They couldn't get Robinson going. They couldn't get nothing going. Bryce Young pulling his best Jalen Hurts impression, barely passing for like 20-something times for 120 yards, but pulling out a big victory. What the hell happened there?
Rome, I'm going to disagree about the Falcons defense letting you down. It wasn't the Falcons defense. I mean, they only gave up, I'm looking at the numbers, 224 yards. Carolina was only 3 of 11 on third down. That's a great defensive performance. I would take that every Sunday. Problem with Atlanta is their offense was a no-show, like our picks, basically, previously on this show, a no-show. Like, they were just terrible, man. It was bad.
I just don't get it.
The Falcons have been tough to figure out, man. It's been this is the second year now of us. I don't know what to do week to week with the Falcons, because they could come out in the next couple of weeks and beat Tampa Bay or something like that, and we're gonna be like, oh, they play the Commanders this week, you know, and we're gonna be shocked if they somehow beat the Commanders and be like, oh, the Commanders are supposed to go to the Super Bowl, and now like they're losing to the Falcons. Like, I don't know week to week with that team. The Penix thing is interesting, though. There was something floating online, or like, he hasn't beat a team that scored more than 7 points or something like that. It's been like floating out. And now I know he's got like, I don't know, like just 5-6 starts or something like that. But at the end of the day, like, you're going to need more reps out of him too. So going to Kirk Cousins isn't going to be your long-term answer likely. So you're going to need more out of it. But yeah, to Aaron's point, the defense keeping him in it, what are we going to do offensively? How do they get Bijan to continue to expand his role to take pressure off of Penix, you know, while still getting some of these weapons around them, you know, the touches that they need. But yeah, I agree with you, Rome. Kind of a day that you want to forget, because it's one thing to just lose and it's like, hey, it's an unexpected upset, but lose 30 to nothing. You got nothing offensively, right, with all the skill players that you got for Atlanta. Like, it's pretty remarkable. I've seen some bad offenses being a Bears fan, but man, getting a zero on the board, that's rough.
And a zero against a bad Carolina team too. I mean, in fact, the Atlanta so bad that they fired their wide receivers coach. So that was yesterday.
Did they? Oh, wow.
So he got the blame for it. He's out. Atlanta, I mean, I keep hearing something about Kirk Cousins. Kirk Cousins is not the answer. Like, we've been talking, like Jason said, we've been talking about the Falcons. They can look like world beaters. They look great against Minnesota. Defense was flying. Offense was efficient. And we know Minnesota is a good, solid defensive team and tough to beat there and at home. Carolina, I mean, they've looked god-awful. I mean, outside of that basic third, fourth quarter they had against Arizona, they'd scored 19 points in 6 quarters. Yeah. Against, you know, not great football teams in Jacksonville and Arizona, and then the 30 burger. That's rough. Rough if you're Atlanta, man. It was rough, but to Jason's point, it's a great spot for them to come back this upcoming week against Washington, who's banged up, and Washington's defense is not good at all. I mean, the Raiders put points on them, Green Bay's put points on them. So it's a good spot for their offense this week to get back on track.
Let's go to that Raiders game real quick. That was like my other nominee for ass whooping of the week, because I think it was 34-7 or 34-10 at some point in the game, and that game was out of reach, and like the Raiders just kind of, it was all in what do you call that, trash time, dump time,
garbage time,
there you go. I couldn't think of it. Yeah, it was all in garbage time. And so, like, Geno Smith, like, yeah, it looked like he had a great game. But honestly, those 3 quarters, like, ineptitude. But 41-24, that's a pretty big ass whipping as well. I thought the Raiders were going to show up. I thought they had to, and they didn't. It was a little too little too late.
Year one of Pete Carroll, getting Geno Smith, I think the offensive line, I don't know, Aaron, you may have saw more of that game. It hasn't been great, because Genty's got like 169 yards rushing, and 167 of it is after contact. So I'm pretty sure he's getting hit in the...
I think I was talking to our guy Nick. He's a big Raiders fan, and he's not happy about the offensive line. He was mentioning I think Ginty mentioned was hit behind the line of scrimmage like on 11 of his 17 carries before he even basically got back to the original line of scrimmage.
They're not blocking anybody.
This O line is bad, and they're not even really using Ginty as like a workhorse. I mean, he's basically getting 12 to 15 carries a game, where he probably needs to be getting 20 to 25. I mean, they got Jason's Bears this week. Not a great defense. They got their issues their own. I think it's going to be a high-scoring game shootout there in Vegas, but we'll see. It's a big game for both teams because one of them is going to get back to 500.
Yeah, they don't use like Brock Bowers efficiently. They don't use
He's playing on one leg, it looks like.
I don't know the thing about the Raiders. I think Geno Smith might be there with Russell. It might be time.
I think Geno's got more in the tank than Russell, but when you have a suspect offensive line, like you can't run the ball, now you're relying more on the pass. Now you got teams with decent defensive lines that are able to just tee off on that. Like that's the tough stuff, you know, to be a quarterback behind that. I mean, Geno wasn't great, but he wasn't bad either. I don't think he had a turnover. He didn't throw a pick. Had three touchdowns.
Isn't Geno the last 2 years lead the league in completion percentage, like at 71%? So, I mean, if you give Geno time, he can throw the ball, and he's pretty accurate. Okay mobility, not great. I mean, he can scramble out if he needs to, but like Jason said, I mean, this O-line is bottom third in the league. They're not running the ball, and when you get behind, like they have been these last 2 weeks against the Chargers and Washington, you can only do one thing and throw the ball, and that allows these defensive ends to kind of just tee back and rush the quarterback. They don't have to play the run, and it makes things difficult. It makes it tough. So, big game, like I said, coming up with the Bears.
Yeah. So out of those four games, you guys give the ass whooping of the week to the Bengals. Bengals Vikings.
I do.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree.
All right. Cool. Congratulations, Bengals, on ass whooping of the week for this week. All right, let's move on to some games that were like pretty close calls, or you just didn't expect the result to kind of go on the way it happened. Aaron, what kind of sticks out for you?
A lot of games, Rome, but you touched on one already. Yeah. Panthers over the Falcons.
Yeah,
I mean, 30-0 on that one.
That made no sense.
I think we'd both agree the best team the first 2 weeks of the NFL season was probably the Green Bay Packers. I don't know. I mean. They didn't cover the game, but I don't even know how they lost. I mean, the Browns don't score a point till like at 56 minutes into the game and somehow managed to, as Jason talked about earlier, this block field goal brigade that we had going on. The Browns decided to get in on this and steal a victory from the Packers. But I think it's a good loss for the Packers in the long run. That game obviously was a shocker, I think, for everybody.
I picked the Packs with you, I think, when we were doing the picks, but I was uneasy about this one. I was uneasy about taking the Rams and Eagles game just because the Browns, I think they're like 15-3 or something like that against teams with winning records at home over the last couple of years. And like their defense is still solid. Just 10 points out of that electric offense. Weird.
Yeah. That was the most shocking to me. I know the blowout of the Falcons, agree with Aaron on that, but I think the Packers, what we saw from weeks one and two is like, wow, who's going to stop this team? You know, they made the Lions look so bad. Aaron and I were calling the Lions basically donezo after week one that we couldn't get the thing.
I remember.
And then, you know, what they were able to do, you know, in week two, you know, just didn't change that with the Commanders. That the Commanders had all the hype coming off of last year and what they've been doing and building in Washington. And so like you're expecting this kind of an automatic win where the Browns were like, hey, they're playing the Browns, the Cowboys this next week, the Bengals, like, man, you're saying, hey, this team's going to be 5-0, you know, maybe 6-0 after they play the Cardinals, like, and to lose a game to the Browns, you know, Aaron's right. Interesting place to play. And you, Rome, you just called it out on the record. The Browns may have at home versus some winning teams, but yeah, the way they lost the game, but for even to be that close, cause you know, you just looked at Jordan Love being able to get the ball to so many different aspects of their offense in the first 2 weeks, able to rely on the running game with Jacobs in some key situations. And yeah, just It's one of those bad losses. Aaron's probably right. This motivates the team. It turns into a good loss. You know, you got, but you're tied, you know, for the division. And we talked through, you know, a 2-1 Vikings team, 2-1 Lions team, 2-1 Packers team. It's tight in the NFC North. Bears, like, you know, not as good at 1-2 a game out, but I think it makes it maybe a little more competitive than we were thinking after the first 2 weeks. And so that, I think it's a little shaky there, but you know, they play a bad Cowboys defense coming up, and probably all is right in the world in Green Bay after they probably blow them out.
Oh, they're going to answer back for sure. Yeah. Feel bad for Cowboys fans. I think how close the Bucks and Jets game was, I wasn't expecting to be that tight.
It wasn't really close. I mean, it's kind of one of those scores where you look at it, but what was it? It was 23-6 going in the fourth quarter.
Yeah. But then they let the Jets come back, and then it was like that crazy fourth quarter frame, like all the afternoon, like as all the games were ending, you had blocked field goals, blocked punts. They returned it for a touchdown. I'm like, all right, cool. At least Baker has more time to do like another game winning drive. And luckily they pulled out. That was pretty crazy.
I think the funniest thing of that game, I'm sure you guys have seen it if you haven't, and after that blocked field goal, touchdown return was the Aaron Glenn dance.
Oh, dude, that was like a good dance.
Yeah. It's like he's got the victory. And then Baker probably just saw it and said, hey, hold these while I'm fucking going to beat your ass again, right? So, I'm glad the Jets lose every game.
If you're watching it, just as the field goal got blocked and they were like panning to Baker, and they just go, you just see him like, God damn it. And like, all right, well, we got some time left on the clock. And he just like did it again. It was pretty amazing.
Is Baker 3-0 in fourth quarter comebacks this year? Because did he rally back to beat the Falcons too? Or was that
they've
a tie
all
game?
Come back? Yeah, they've all come back in the last 30 seconds of the game. Game winning field goal. It's pretty crazy.
He's got to be now in the top five in fourth quarter comebacks of active quarterbacks, I would imagine, now in the NFL.
That's a good stat to look up.
I mean, it sounds right. All these games feel like they're just coming down to the end, where I think all of us were pretty high on the Buccaneers at the beginning of the season. And these games have been so close with them. It's like, man, are they really kind of who we, you know, do they have what we need? But hey, we have a 3-point win, a 1-point win, and a 2-point win here in 3 weeks.
Know.
But the 3-0, they've won, and that's a division that's got a bad Saints team, a bad Panthers team, and a Falcons team that can't make up its mind what it wants to do. So, I mean, 3 wins already in that division, man. You might be like, you know, a little less than halfway home to get enough wins to make the playoffs.
Valid point. Any other games, surprising outcomes?
I would say not a surprise they won, but a surprise in how they won. Rome, you'll like this. Detroit. Detroit just physically manhandled basically Baltimore on the offense and defensive line. I didn't see that coming. I'm not surprised Detroit won. I mean, they got a talented team. Jason mentioned in week one, kind of they're breaking in some new guards. Their offensive line has been shaky. They didn't look good against Green Bay. Baltimore, we just know, is one of these physical teams that kind of just manhandles you up front. Ravens were without two D linemen that really showed up and hurt. I mean, this was the first time in 25 years that a team ran for over 200 yards against these guys in Baltimore. It never happens. I never seen Baltimore in the Hardball era that I can remember just get manhandled on the defensive line and get beat up like they did like that. So impressive win by Detroit in the fashion in which they did it. I was shocked by that.
I wasn't as shocked. But I wasn't down on the Lions as much as you guys were. Jared Goff has looked great per usual. He's still keeping up with what he did last year. For them to run the ball, though, the way they did, Sonic and Hedgehog, or whatever they saw, Sonic and Knuckles, they just completely dominated the whole game. Goff didn't really need to do much in the air. Amon-Ra St. Brown, he had like this really cool touchdown, talking shit in the camera with a hot live mic. That was pretty fun to see. By the way, social media was going crazy just because he's from like Anaheim Hills, I guess. I was saying like he's not allowed to act that dope, that gangster scoring a touchdown. It's like, dude, everyone's so fucking sensitive. Out of that game, though, I was kind of surprised with the defense. They just didn't apply enough pressure. Derrick Henry fumbling for the third game in a row. That's kind of weird. Just like having the ball hang out there. I don't think that's ever happened in his career. Lamar Jackson looked phenomenal, so he's always going to keep him in these games. And they actually put a scare. I turned the TV off, or at least I put on mute. I think I started texting you guys, like, all right, cool, I got this victory in the books, and they scored the touchdown, convert on the two points. So they made it exciting. But yeah, big win by the Detroit Lions. They definitely made some waves, and they're integrating their new offensive line pieces very well. And plus, I mentioned when we're doing the Lions, Aaron, their defensive players are all coming back. They're just gearing up, kind of getting all that rust when they've been out all last year. I'm liking the way Hutchinson's looking and the rest of the team.
Yeah, I mean, Ravens are a tough offense. They scored, what, 30 points on them? But I think the real thing is, Rome, like you mentioned, their defense. You can get big plays against these guys. You can score. But the seven sacks they had, they contained Lamar Jackson. They made plays. Aiden Hutchinson, you pay these guys, these DNs, to make plays on the quarterback or force fumbles on running backs. That was a big key. And then they had I think the Ravens had a first and goal in the second quarter. Did not get in. Again, the Lions won the battle up front. That was the difference in this game. I mean, I don't think it's a great defensive unit on the back end. They give them some big plays in the passing game. Again, so we'll see. Detroit's got talent. Good win for them. A really good win on the road against a good Ravens team, but we'll see how they finish out.
I still think they're really good.
I think they're still good, too, and I think they're still in it for the Super Bowl, because you're talking about a big comeback from the Bills, and then this team's 2-1 versus 1-2 sitting now. I think there's two questions you ask yourself from the Ravens when you've played premier oppositions on the other side of the ball with the Bills and now the Lions. Like, it is just a shootout. This isn't like a dominant Ravens defense.
It was a heavyweight fight, man.
It is, but like you expect by reputation, the Ravens have this defense that's keeping it close. But this is a different type of Ravens team where, hey, cool, we're just turning into a shootout like Ron Madden, and it's last person with the ball wins type stuff. I think defense potentially number one. I think number two, the biggest thing is going to be looking at Derrick Henry right now, because he's got three fumbles in three games right now, which is, you know, super uncharacteristic for him. Crazy. And so is it basically the two losses? I don't think you could put it square on him, but they've been turning points of the game
at the late.
I think the Buffalo one you can pit on him. This one, I think Detroit was still,
in control.
But Buffalo was basically dead, as we know, by the 25,000 fans leaving. That fumble was the fumble heard in the parking lot when everybody was trying to scramble back in.
Yep. So, I mean, I just think that's concerning for a guy that's so dominant and just like a freak of nature when you're talking being a 30-year-old running back and how big and how fast and like the way he runs the ball. And it was never a question like you get scared handing him the ball because he's just going to take it to the house and just run over everybody. But now when you're in a position to ice games or you need big carries from him, all of a sudden fumbling becomes a liability. And so I believe that it will be fixed. But I think this is a problem going forward because, hey, man, like we can't have a bad turnover in a key moment, and he's got to be a piece you rely on, because you don't want to just be Lamar Jackson everywhere in the fourth quarter. There's got to be other options that the defense is gunning for. But now, like, hey, we're a little more confident going after Derrick Henry, you know, defensively, because there's the opportunity that it's going to force a turnover. So I think two things to unpack, but I don't think it's panic time for Baltimore, because like last year there was the unexpected loss to what was the Raiders in week two last year, and they were like 0-2 or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, they play a Chiefs team next week that, you know,
big game,
but I don't know what you're thinking there from what you've seen from the Chiefs that would give you really much faith that they'd be able to keep up pace wise with that defense. And then they play a Texans team after that. Out of all the most disappointing teams of the year, the Texans, I mean, we're like 13 months from you guys sending these guys to the Super Bowl.
I was going to say that.
I don't think it's a bad take. It's just a bad job of what they've done coaching-wise.
What happened?
They got rid of Bobby Solvik, and they progressed worse. They got rid of their best offensive lineman, sent them to Washington. They got rid of an OC that was, you know, top five board candidate for head coaching gigs. And yeah, it's a mess with the Texans. A lot of talent there. I mean, but if you actually put on the tape and watch these guys, they're literally one bad play from not making it being 3-0. They're going in for the scoring drive against the Rams. They fumble inside the 20.
Yeah.
Baker, 4th and 10, sneaks out the 5-hole, gets the first down, beats them. And then they're driving late to get the winning score. Nico fumbles. Jacksonville gets it and goes down and gets the score. So, yeah, they are 0-3. I don't trust them at all. But it's not like they're getting beat bad like some of these teams are.
Aaron. Yeah, well, go ahead, Jason.
I was going to say, they get the Titans this week to, you know, get their first win and try to figure things out. But I think Aaron's completely right, because if you look at the last – basically 12 months of CJ Stroud, you know, it was like, oh, we're chalking this up to like a sophomore slump. There's kind of the infamous picture of him and Caleb Williams after week two last year.
It's not a good record since then, and people are keeping track.
It's not a good record since
bad
then.
Juju.
The stats bear out that Caleb's outplaying him since that picture was taken too. And so, but like Aaron said, like, how much are you blaming coaching? Because he was sacked more than I think anyone last year. You know, from an
second
offensive line
to second to Caleb.
Second to Caleb, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he was sacked second, and I mentioned, you know, you weren't on the pod, Jason, but he was getting pressure on 40% of his dropback passes, which already was ranked third coming into this game against Jacksonville. The O-line's the problem. I mean, I'm high on CJ Stroud. I think he's an elite quarterback, an elite arm, an elite talent, but they can't run the ball, and Mixon and him not being there, that really has hurt them a lot. Him being out, they got no run game, one-dimensional. They're all defense and special teams. That's it right now for the Texans.
I think you talked me into the Eagles pick, Aaron, and thank God, because we won that one. But I talked to you away from the Jags on this one. I said Texans have to win. Otherwise, they're going down 0-3. They're still, I think they're more talented than Jacksonville. And then, so we pivoted over to the Texans.
Rome, if there's two games I regret, I should have taken Jacksonville and I should have taken the Vikings. Everybody else I'm satisfied with, those are the two I regret. I mean, I'd still take the Falcons over Carolina any day, but
yeah, yeah.
That shit happens.
You accept those losses. Yeah, but like the Jags, you were edging that way and I talked you into the Texans. It's just the way the cookie crumbles. I don't know. Yeah, Texans are in trouble, man. 0-3? They're in deep shit.
I think they're 0-3, but the biggest thing is they're 0-3 and the Colts are 3-0. And so when you're looking at competition in that division, who is it going to come from? I think the Colts were there, but I think the Jags were a team that are a couple years removed from, you know, playoffs. And last year they're supposed to take that. That were way beyond the Blake Bortles, but it was 2 years ago. You know, they had that playoff.
They beat the
game.
Chargers. Yeah, they beat the Chargers in the wild card and got beat by the Chiefs in the divisional game. Yeah.
Yeah. So they're 2 years away from that. And I think last year we were hyping up of what this team was going to be because, hey, you had Doug Peterson, you know, Trevor Lawrence. Is he going to start taking a step under Peterson? And then last year was just a complete, you know,
dog doo-doo.
Disaster season.
Their defense sucked.
It did. And then, you know, Trevor Lawrence just hasn't taken that step. And the thing for me for the Jags this year, we didn't talk a ton on the preview, and I'll say it's become ever more apparent, even with the Jags sitting at 2-1 right now, the Shane Waldron offensive coordinator curse of taking away the best wide receivers. If you've looked at what he did in Seattle and now in Chicago and now going into what he's doing in Jacksonville, you had Jackson's Smith Ejigba, as the year Waldron leaves, he explodes. Now you're looking at the year Waldron's gone to Chicago, Roman Dunze exploding. He comes into Jacksonville, Brian Thomas, who was like, you know, maybe on par with Neighbors last year for best rookie wide receiver, you know, basically ghosted, you know, this entire first 3 weeks except for kind of the fourth quarter there where he finally made a big play. So I question a ton offensively with Shane Waldron and what they have. You have a lot of stock in what Liam Cohen is doing at the head coach in there, but man, there's been some things offensively from the Jags that are a little bit questionable early on. But hey, they're 2-1. They've made good strides. I know Aaron and I talked. What Liam Cohen and the offense have done, I think Travis Etienne, you know, was almost getting like benched last year for Tank Bigsby and some other stuff going on. They've reestablished what he can be and be an elite number one running back. Only 56 yards this last week, but I think the emphasis on getting him the ball, working the clock, and, you know, what Liam Cohen had done in Tampa Bay with the running backs there. Aaron and I had titled that early, and I think that's where some of the pluses have been for Jacksonville.
Yeah, I mean, Jacksonville's ran the ball well. I mean, Liam Cohen's one of the better run creator guys in this league, calling a game. That's really helped. I mean, so well that they shipped Bigsby out to Philadelphia. So they like where they're at in the running back room. Like I said, they're 2-1. That's a big win. They could really easily be 3-0. I mean, they should have probably beat the Bengals in week two. Let's be honest. They gave that game away.
Yeah.
They got a big game against Rome's 49ers coming up. I'm curious, you know, Rome, did you talk to the guy that gets into the 49er games? Was he there at this one? The guy basically, you know, walks around and says what's up and slips a quick 50 and all of a sudden he's in the lower bowl. I saw some empty seats there, so I think he might have got in again.
Yeah, tickets are actually pretty cheap this weekend. I thought about doing last-minute tickets for me and my daughter. I did text. I haven't talked to him, but I did text Will, though, friend of the pods, and they do listen from time to time. They were down on the 49ers at halftime. Like, they were not happy. And I was like, don't worry, dude. I think they'll pull it out. So they were just drinking on the Budweiser patio for the second half, getting hammered with other up-and-down 49er fans. But they pulled out the victory. It was a fun Mac Jones winning drive to go to 3-0, man. Who would have thought? Mac Jones looking pretty decent.
Well, I think we all had the 49ers going 3-0 that week schedule that they've pretty much had to start the year.
Well, they almost lost this, too. Like, you got Connor that went out, and he was starting out hot. Like, I was a little nervous in that first quarter. I'm like, dude, like, Cardinals look like they're on a mission. And then when he goes down, the whole vibe kind of changes. And that's it. And for some reason, Marvin Harrison Jr. can't catch a ball.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, Arizona's a tough team for me to figure out offensively because
it's too early.
Was it Kevin McBride, the tight end? I would say he's, what, a top three, top five tight end in this league. He's pinning up big numbers. And Harrison Jr. just literally sitting there, basically can fair catch half the passes he gets and can't even catch them. Their run game's inconsistent. Their defense has played hard, even though they're banged up on that side. Arizona's a team that's tough for me to figure out. Even going into this Thursday matchup with Seattle, I mean, that game could go either way because their it's in Arizona, but they're built pretty identical. Like, kind of since they're kind of built the same defense first, kind of grind it out, run the ball, and then hit you over the top with some play action. But Arizona had a good chance to win that game. I mean, 49ers banged up. Mac Jones, I think he was playing that game with a PCL tear, whatever, he got re-injured something.
Yeah.
That's a tough loss for Arizona. They had that game, but they give the Niners credit. Jake Moody out, Pinero in, they get the W.
Oh, people were going crazy up here. They're like, Moody would have lost that for sure. He would have went wide left. It was cheering, dude. The bars, you could hear all the bars around just cheering. They were happy that Moody was out. So there's not a lot of love for Moody right now in the Bay Area.
Where did Moody get picked up? Did he get picked up by your Bears, Jason? Is that where he went?
Yeah, he's on the practice squad.
I forgot where he went. Okay.
It was good making the rounds in social media because the Bears got a pretty solid kicker in Cairo Santos, but he's accurate, but literally anything beyond 50, he doesn't get the leg for it. And so it was pretty much, do you want Moody, who can kick it a mile, but can't make it, has no accuracy, or you got Santos, who can kick it only like 40 yards, but has no like length beyond that. So it's like, you don't know who you're picking when it comes to the kicker. So I don't know if the Bears move on from Cairo Santos, because I think there's some dependability in these short yarded situations, but it was an interesting pickup.
All right. Covered some pretty good close games. Biggest wins for week three. Jason, who do you think got the biggest win?
Well, obviously, I'm wearing the hat, Rome. The Bears got the biggest win of the weekend.
It was a big win, dude. I was going with the Bears this week.
I obviously, it's a little personal for me when I'm thinking about the Bears having the win. But if the Bears were sitting at 0-3 right now, the conversation around Chicago, the national media, you know, specifically around probably Caleb Williams, no matter what was happening defensively for the Bears, because Aaron called it out, the Bears' defense is not great. And the first two losses, I don't put it 100% on Caleb. You know, you give up 50 points to the Lions, man, you're not coming back from that defensively. And even in the first loss to the Vikings, like, the Bears were in a position to be up, were up in that game, everything up till the fourth quarter, and the defense let them down. So I think if the Bears were 0-3, there'd be a ton of more, you know, negative conversation around Caleb and Ben Johnson and everything, you know, going on there. So that's why I think it's, I think that was the biggest win of the weekend. I think it highlighted a ton wrong with the Cowboys at the same time too. But the revisionist history going into that game, you know, I don't know what the national media was picking, but the Bears were they home dogs? Did they end up being like, was it?
Yeah, I think
Cowboys
favored. I think they closed as a 1.5 point underdog. The Bears did.
Yeah. So, I mean, they're a dog at home. And, you know, so going into that game, I don't think anyone was expecting. They didn't know what to get from the Bears. And there was a conversation that Cassidy was out early. But, you know, I think overall, like, the Bears offense was able to do things that you're kind of expecting in a Ben Johnson offense, even if it is, you know, maybe one of the worst defenses in the NFL in Dallas. But I think it's a get back on the right track with the Bears. I don't know if they get to the 10 wins I said at the beginning of the season, but now you're in a position playing the Raiders next week. Both teams 1-2. The Bears are in a position to get back to 500 before their bye week. And, you know, that's why it just looks so impressive offensively for the Bears of all the different pieces they got involved offensively. Are you'd be able to do that every week against a great defense? No. Do I still have concerns about the running game? 100%. And I have more concerns about the run defense because some timely turnovers, specifically on the first Dallas drive of Tyreek Stevenson ripping the ball out of Javonta Williams' hands.
That was a hell of a play.
I mean, it's not. I don't know if you could say it's a game-changing play because the game ended up being tied 14-14 at one point, but Bears went 3-and-out to start the game, and Williams ripped off, I think, two runs, you know, at that point. I think he had 30-something runs and two carries, that second carry ending in the turnover, and then that led to a huge Bears touchdown pass to Roma Dunze off that. So I think there's a scenario in the game if they run the ball down thinking Dallas is up 7-0. You know, does this game turn into something different? And then they, you know, CD goes in at running back. I know people are ripping Schottenheimer for that decision, although it's funny because on the opposite side of the ball, the Bears had DJ Moore lined up as running back at least two or three times in the game. That Bears fans around me were wondering why they're lining him up as running back. So they're trying to get these guys touches any way possible. But yeah, you gave me my Bears segment, Rome. I'd say that they were the biggest winner of the weekend.
No, Caleb looked great. Roma Dunze looked great. Looks like they're developing nice chemistry there. You talk about the Bears defense, though. At least, like, they get, like, sacks. They get interceptions. They kind of break up stuff, but they do allow a lot of points. You know what defense it almost mirrors them statistically in every category? And they were talked about potentially being, like, one of the top defenses coming into the season? My Steelers.
The Steelers have not looked good, Rome.
They look like shit.
They should have lost on Sunday. But yeah, talking about big wins, I mean, yeah, touching on what Jason said, the Bears, that was a nice win. The defense made some good plays. CeeDee Lamb getting hurt obviously helped them a lot there because Dallas never scored again after, I believe, went down.
Yeah.
I do think the Bears would still win that game. It's a big confidence builder for them going forward. But Rome, the biggest win of the week, the Chargers. Chargers get to 3-0, but not only that, now they're 3-0 in the division. They've beaten everybody in the division to start the year.
Kansas City, Raiders, Broncos.
If you could start the year 3-0 and have a leg up like that on the division like they do right now,
that's money.
That's the big winner for me, because if you lose that game with Kansas City winning the Broncos and you lose that home, you go to 2-1, they'd have the edge in the tiebreaker. Now you've got a two-game lead in the division over everybody else. Some winnable games coming up as they travel to the Giants to face now a rookie quarterback since they've made that switch. You know, we talked about it, Harbaugh year two. We thought this team was last year, we said, kind of, you know, a year ahead of schedule. Now, you know, they're making the jump to be that, you know, elite-tier team. I think Buffalo's still better, but right now it's step below them is the Chargers, and if they stay healthy and keep coming, they're going to be difficult. They got some concerns of some offensive linemen being banged up, but overall, we know Jesse Minter and this defense of coordinator that he is has got them playing great. You know, whether or not you thought he was stealing signs and had all the show calls there at Michigan,
I think
you can put that to bed, because what he's doing here in the NFL with a Chargers defense that ranked bottom to last when Brandon Staley was there, put that rumor to bed. That's a joke. What he's done there is a great job, and he's going to be a candidate for a head coaching job here, if not next season, the following year, because the Chargers defensively, you know, they're really good. So it's going to be tough for the rookie guy coming in, Dart, to beat these guys. I look for the Chargers probably to get to 4-0.
Yeah, Chargers are good. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, it's not a bad call because I think the 3-0 is a big deal in that division. And I think on the flip side, for the Broncos, one of Aaron's five teams in the NFL, I would say that's a little...
I'll take it, man. Oh, like, wow. I gotta balance it out.
A little burn here.
No burn. I mean, wow. Just, we know we had the AT Bowl, you know, just a week ago with the Colts Broncos. We know I love what I'm seeing from the Colts, man.
I love what I'm seeing from them.
But I think the Broncos, you expect them to kind of come into that game. And Bo Nix, like, I guess that was where I was drinking Aaron's Kool-Aid a little bit here in year two, where you're gonna see him make this step up. And man, it has not been. It's been, I don't know if it's worse than last year, but it definitely hasn't gotten better, where you've expected to see more for all the reps under Sean Payton's offense, but we've not seen it at all.
They're facing some pretty tough defenses, so I got to give them that, though. It's a pretty tough start to the season.
Broncos are close. I mean, Bo Nix, like Jason mentioned, he missed some throws. He had some chance for big plays. He's only two out of eight in completions over 25 yards attempt. I'm not worried really about the Broncos. We know they got a good defense. They've lost two games basically out the horn, field goal kicks. This team, I mean, the leverage call, whether or not it should have been called or not against the Colts, you could argue it either way. It's a stupid call. It's a stupid penalty. It's a safety penalty. I don't like it, but, you know, hey, I had the Colts that game. It was the AT Bowl, like Jason mentioned. So I was happy with either side that won that game. And, yeah, like we said, Chargers 3-0, all three games, division victories. I mean, if you can go, you know, if you can win four or five division games, that usually means you're going to win the division. And the Chargers, we talk about them not just getting to the playoffs, but having a chance maybe to win a playoff game. Maybe they get a chance to host a game or two. That would be big before, you know, as we get later down the road.
Yeah, they were my dark horse to make some noise in the playoffs. So now they look great. They're doing that Harbaugh jump again. He's done that everywhere. He's got some people calling him the greatest coach ever. I don't, it's a little too early for that. There's a lot of fandom around him, but no, big win from the Chargers. Really happy for that whole team. That's awesome for the city of San Diego. I mean, LA. Other big victories. Bills, big win against the Dolphins. We didn't talk about that.
I don't even consider it a big win. I mean, it's a cakewalk win for them.
Well, you know, just for the semester, Dolphins' little funeral coming up. I love it.
It does. And for the Bills, man, I mean, you get past the Ravens. I think that was the opening win you needed. The Jets game obviously wasn't close. This Dolphins game, maybe a little more competitive than you thought, but again,
it was closer than I thought it'd be. Yeah.
You start looking at the schedule now that they play the Saints, then they get another division game with the Patriots that, you know, it could be kind of interesting, but, and then they got Falcons, Panthers, a Chiefs team that doesn't look good. Then the Dolphins again, man, like there's an opportunity here for the Bills, man. I don't know. You start looking at some of their schedule. Is it a 15 win team, 14 win team? Like,
can't be that easy.
I mean,
you know what? I can't remember who it was.
I mean,
they're
over under. Their over under was 12 and a half, right?
It was, yeah.
Half, whatever it was. So,
I mean, you got.
What they win
like,
last year? 13 games.
There's some people talking shit though.
They're better this year than they were last year.
Yeah. They could trip up against the Bucks.
I think that'd be emotional. The game you got to look at is maybe Atlanta. You never know what you're going to get against them.
You never know.
Atlanta will be there. I don't think the Chiefs game will be as hard, but it'll probably be unrealistically close because all these Chiefs games tend not to be in like
the emotions.
It is in Buffalo, so the Bills seem to always win that one.
Who knows how the Pats look by the end of the season? Got Eagles. I don't know.
There's some favorability there where they're, hey, they're going to run
away
with this
division. Their schedule's really, really favorable. I mean, they should at no worse when they play the Chiefs be 7-1.
The Bills got the, what is it, you guys make fun of the Texas Longhorn schedule? That's the kind of schedule they got.
It's fair. I think the Niners got that Texas Longhorn schedule too. Like,
oh, they definitely got that schedule. Yeah.
Well, so. I mean, yeah, Rome. I mean, Buffalo. Well, Baltimore. That was a big win. Miami's just been garbage right now. I mean, Tampa Bay, Houston looks bad. Pittsburgh, Cincinnati. I mean, they got a tough end, but now of all these guys being hurt, not what they thought. It's looking good, but yeah, I mean, the team with the real schedule, easy one, is the 49ers. No doubt about that.
Yeah, let's recap a little bit. I think we talked about almost every game. Colts, though, especially, that was such a big one. See, Jason, I think we were talking a lot about Daniel Jones, maybe a little too early, a year too early, because we meant what we were talking about him last year, Danny Dimes. We meant for this year because he's been lights out. He was on the Manning cast last night on Monday Night Football. Doesn't really talk a lot. This guy.
The Mannings, I think, were the people who believed in Daniel Jones the most.
They liked him.
Because he was, I'm pretty sure, Aaron, you can correct me, I'm pretty sure he was like at the Manning camp, and then like Eli really endorsed him when they took him to the Giants. So I think he's on the boat there. I mean, I don't know if is it him or is it Aaron's guy Steichen that's getting the most out of him here at this point, but they definitely found something. I mean, if you're a Giants fan, man, I got a bad as a Bears fan, but if you're a Giants fan, you watch Daniel Jones do this. You see Saquon go and win a Super Bowl. Geez, it's rough. It's rough out there for Giants fans.
Well, that's what they needed, right? They just needed like a stable quarterback that wasn't going to make crazy mistakes, which is weird. Like, I don't know what's going on with the Giants. Daboll, like, the better Daniel Jones looks, the more I think Daboll should, you know, lose his job.
You're not. Rome, it's kind of.
Go ahead.
No, I'll say you're not wrong in that, Rome, because that was who's the OC for Buffalo right now?
Joe Brady.
Yeah. Brady. And so he was coming up in the conversations for like head coaching jobs and stuff like that. And it's like, I'm just always very wary of the guy who's OC for like a generational quarterback like Josh Allen or like Lamar Jackson. Like, because what is this guy doing to get the most out of, you know, what we got here? And Daboll was what, you know, the second or third OC for Josh Allen, and so I don't know, a lot of questions when you take those guys. And that's when Brady was coming up for the job interviews last year. I was like, man, I'm super wary of a guy like that, because his success is really on you having a top three quarterback, top two quarterback in the league. And they've just never either got Daboll the pieces, or he hasn't got the most of kind of what he's had. And you got a lot of questions there. But the Giants, I mean, it's been, what, a decade at this point for, like, they get some stars, but everything around that doesn't turn into wins. I mean, between them and the Jets, I saw some stuff on SportsCenter with Scott Van Pelt, and they were doing some stuff. It's just literally how bad this Jets and Giants run have been for, like, 10-plus years.
It's been pretty bad.
I mean, I think the Brian Daboll, it's tough because – he was at Alabama as an OC, helped them to a couple national titles. Then he goes to Buffalo, kind of resurrects Josh Allen, kind of cleans up a little bit of him. I mean, Josh Allen, you know, obviously was getting better and stuff, so he did some good things there.
Yeah.
And then you get, you know, Saquon, the Giants were ready to give up on him. He had, what, you know, ACL tear. I think he got hurt, missed, you know, 6 games the next year. Daniel Jones hadn't looked great. And then he gets him to the playoffs. Not only that, they win a playoff game against who? Minnesota Vikings. Then they run into the Eagles, who were just, you know, the Eagles at the time, were they like 15-1, 15-2 that year. They got to the Super Bowl, should have won that Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And then, you know, everybody's got high hopes for them, and they shit the bed, right? Everybody kind of figured it out. So I think Brian Daboll is, you know, he's getting a lot of heat there, but I don't think they've pitted a lot. I mean, their offensive line's not great. They've got rid of Saquon Barkley, a great running back. The running back situation is not much there. I mean, they got Scadabo. He seems to be doing okay. You know, touching on Joe Brady, I mean, yeah, if you give Joe Brady an elite quarterback, he gets the best out of him. You gave him Joe Burrow, he turned him into a stud. You give him Josh Allen, he's taking him to another level. But then you put him in Carolina for Matt Rhule with no talent, and he's fired 15 games in or whatever it is. I like Joe Brady. If I was the Titans, that's who I would call, because I think he can turn Cam Ward, has that generational talent possibility, put some players around him and grow on that. So we'll see. We'll see. But I'm high on Joe Brady. He was probably my number three top candidate behind Ben Johnson and Liam Cohen as OCs last year. Now he's at the top of that board.
Yeah, and I'm not trying to throw, you know, Joe Brady under the bus for that. I'm just saying when you make a consideration as a head coach to hire the head coach, like, what are you kind of getting in compliment to the entire organization? And like, yeah, I think the Hard Knocks offseason has done the Giants no favors. If you remember what they were talking about, drafting different people and stuff like that, and it just made them look like not a great run franchise. I think it was one of the kids of the coaches or whatever. Like, you should draft so and so.
Oh, the kid was on the money on everybody he mentioned. Like, they're all studs, right, in the NFL.
Right. And so I think that probably has a lot to do with what's going on, because you need overall talent besides what's going on in the offensive side of the ball. But like, there's timing things involved with this thing. Right. And the hardest thing about the NFL is, like, you know, do you give a quarterback the time to develop, and then knowing, is he the right guy I'm investing money in that really turns your cap situation upside down? Because you get 4 years to make a decision before you know, are you having to do the fifth year option, and then do I need to move on and get, is this going to be the guy? Because I got to pay him X amount and then I can't get pieces around him, or am I moving on to start from scratch? And I think you got to the point where Daniel Jones is like, hey, we don't have the pieces around him to make him great. We got to move on and start with something fresh and start this thing from scratch. So it gets to the point where you're like more than through this guy's tenure, and you haven't done what you have and haven't surrounded him as a front office. That's the decisions you got to make. And then you look like idiots after the fact, because, hey, you just plug and play into what they had in the Colts. The Colts had everything except, it seems like, the right guy at quarterback to take this team to the next level.
Well, he has a hell of a running back in Taylor. He had a monster game. They have some fighters on defense. Colts are going to be a lot of fun this year, man.
Well, Colts have everything that Jason's been. They've got a great O-line. They've got a great running back. Good receivers, serviceable, not like a 1A, but a lot of 2 guys.
But good, yeah.
And then they got an elite tight end coming in and Tyler Warner coming out. So, and now you got Shane Steichen. And, you know, say what you want. I mean, every guy that he's worked with, like I said, Herbert's first year was his best year until now this year. He turned Jalen Hurts into an MVP. Now he's taken Daniel Jones, what he was good at, gave him some players and made the game simple, and has turned him into right now a top 12, 15 quarterback, looking good. I mean, the Colts just didn't even punt the ball until what, midway through the second quarter in the third game of the year. I think that's got to be the longest stretch in the NFL.
Yeah, it was like, what, 4 minutes in? Yeah, or 4 minutes left. Pretty crazy.
So, I mean,
well, the Colts have literally been right about this team for about 5 years or so, because they've had this, we kind of got everything except the quarterback since Andrew Luck retired. They've always maintained the, like, they were just gifted Peyton Manning forever. They have one bad year. They get Andrew Luck. And then so when Luck unexpectedly retires, you had the 1 year of Jacoby Brissett, right? And then that didn't work out. And then so they were trying to do this, like, veteran 1 year plug and play strategy.
They brought
Phillips,
they brought Wentz.
Yeah.
Who else did they bring?
And I mean, Rivers and Wentz are the
Rivers
two off the top.
Rivers
of my
had a
head.
Good year.
He did.
Yeah. Got him to the playoffs. So
that's right. Yeah.
So they're doing that 1 year plug and play, and then like, okay, we need to go get someone, and they trade up for Richardson. And I think, oh, like, this guy's got a lot of talent, like physical gifts, but did he have everything you needed to play quarterback in the NFL that isn't just, you know, athletic ability? And that's what they weren't seeing. But now, hey, you got a little bit of a veteran guy who didn't have all the tools around him in New York. And now, hey, like, we're at a position where this is the right guy at the right time with what Aaron said, like, great running back, serviceable wide receivers, could be a really great tight end, an offensive line that keeps you upright, and a defense that, you know, for the most part, they keep you in every game. They're not overly shut down, but they've been in every game so far.
There was an interesting stat, Rome, on the Colts, which I don't know if I'm getting it right or not, but they ranked like number 29th in defense last year and 28th in total offense. 29 total defense, 28, and still won 8 games. Think about that. You're that badly ranked and still won 8 games. Chris Ballard's done a great job pinning talent around this team. To me, the Colts are kind of like one of those teams like the LA Rams and all these guys that had great, they have great players and a good team. They just didn't have the quarterback. I don't know if Daniel Jones is an elite quarterback that I think can win a Super Bowl, but they're going to win that division unless something crazy happens. They're going to host a playoff game, and they're going to likely get to, you know, to the divisional round if things keep going the way they are. And another thing, Rome, I think we talked about it before on the phone. I don't know if we ever talked about it on the show, but do you just give up on a quarterback if you don't have a stud after 5 years instead of paying him? Like the Giants paid, they didn't want to pay Daniel Jones 4 years, $160 million, because, you know, they just didn't have the pieces around him. Do you just get a quarterback for 5 years if he's not projected to be like an all-pro Hall of Famer? Do you just get off of him and redraft another quarterback or bring in serviceable guys for 1 year old veterans? Because Carson Wentz, let's be realistic, he wasn't bad for the Colts. Just Ursay didn't like him, and Ursay said get rid of him. He still won, what, I think 8 or 9 games. They got beat in the last game of the season that eliminated him from the playoffs. They could have stuck with him. Carson Wentz then goes to play the Rams, the Chiefs, and now he's back in the starting lineup, still looking pretty good. So you give these veteran quarterbacks some serviceable offensive coordinator head coaches, and they look pretty good.
Well, the word on the street is like a lot of people like Daniel Jones. His athleticism, his intangibilities, the Mannings like him. I feel like New York was just too much. The media, all that stuff, the bad vibes took off to Minnesota. You know, probably enjoy that little run, seeing what Darnold was doing. Another quarterback that had to take, you know, bounce out of New York as well, and then resurfaces with the Colts. I think it's a really good story. Really good quarterback. I don't know how good he is still, you know, like he's like a big enigma, right? It's kind of like a, not as bad, but I'm getting like these weird Goff vibes, you know, where like Goff was like, is he good or is he not? And they were still asking those questions, you know, 6 years into his career. But on another thing though, Colts and their new owner, she's on top of shit. She's like on every meeting on the sidelines. Seems like they're under really good hands. But the Titans though, Cam Ward, from what I saw, I didn't catch too much of the game, but enough to like, I kind of want to see how he did. He's really athletic, has an arm, made some plays, but the play calling, like some of it was just like atrocious. And I think it was like one point in the game where they were trying to decide whether to go for it or not. They called a timeout, didn't know whether to kick a field goal or go for it. It was like a fourth down territory thing. Run out of time again, called another timeout. It was rough. And then when they asked Callahan afterwards, like, what happened? He's like, well, we just didn't know what to run. Like, they had a bunch of time to run several plays, and they just shat over themselves. Very Eberflus-like. That's what it reminded me of. And I think, funny thing, Steichen, I think, ended up on our hot seat last year at some point, just because of the turmoil around the Colts and, like, you know, rumblings that he was losing the locker. So, big turnaround there. But the Titans, though, I don't think Callahan was ever the good fit there. And I think he's definitely gone by the end of this year. I think I mentioned in the beginning of the year, but he might be gone by Halloween, but I'm not really sure. But not a good fit there at all.
The Titans were a roster that was always interesting during the entire Vrabel era too, because it always felt like they had Derrick Henry and he kind of just carried their offense, and they played great in the trenches. The games were on a Thursday night and it was like 19-17 or something like that. And the score would be. And so I think there's more with the overall like roster construction of this team that you need more than just Cam Ward and, you know,
some other contenders 1 year.
They were, I was like, but you know, as you go through what this team has and what they need, I think there's a lot more there. It's going to kind of build on, to your point, does this coaching staff make it through that as they need a few more pieces? I think the forgiving thing is Aaron talks about, this has always been a winnable division. Now this year, maybe not as much so with the Colts, you know, maybe running away with it being 3-0 right now, but you know, this has always been a winnable. Go ahead.
Do we still got the same GM that had the big ego fight with Vrabel, getting rid of all the players that Vrabel liked? Same GM or a different GM? I can't remember.
I'm fairly certain they got rid of both of them, right?
I got rid of Vrabel first, but I can't remember if the GM ever left. I'm just drawing a blank right now. We can circle back. Any other games should we touch on before we wrap things up? Steelers, Pats. I don't really know what to talk about on that game.
I mean, the Pats gave that game away.
Yeah.
Pats should have won that game. I mean, Drake made a bad interception in the end zone. They fumble in the end zone.
Steelers looked uninspiring.
The Steelers got lucky to win that game. I mean, we'll talk about it later in this week, but I think they're going to get smoked in Dublin coming up this upcoming weekend.
Against Vikings?
Yeah, I think with that defense and the Steelers offense, that's a bad recipe for the Steelers. But, I mean, I like the Patriots. I mean, they've, you know, 5 turnovers, that cost them the game. They don't have a lot of talent right now.
Vrabel went down for it on like some crazy 4th down calls. Like, I think one was like on their own 20 and they didn't get it. It was like, that was like some stuff that Vrabel typically doesn't do. Is he trying to pull off like a little Dan Campbell or what?
I think it's just, I mean, look at that. They're not in win mode now. I mean, if they can win, that's great. But I mean, if you can get a top 10, 12 pick and get some more talent, I think that's what he wants to do. I mean, Mike Vrabel's, you know, Jason, you guys just mentioned, I mean, he took the Titans with Derrick Henry, Tannehill, and A.J. Brown to a conference championship game. And then you get run out of town, and now you got Brian Callahan, who doesn't know what hand is right and what hand is left now, it seems like, when Colin plays. So he's not going to last long there. I like with the Patriots, the direction they're going. They've got, you know, Kraft's got his guy now in Vrabel, so they're going to be better. The Steelers, I know we talked about it. Tomlin's never finished below 500. He's got Aaron Rodgers. They could be in for a rough road, man.
Rodgers and Metcalf look nice, though. So no, they haven't. It's a bunch of big name guys. They're just letting anyone score at will.
To me right now, I'm sure, Jason, you guys could touch on it. It's not a Pittsburgh Steelers unit. It's just like you said, Rome, big names with big personalities that think they can go and do their thing themselves. They're not a cohesive unit right now. They don't get it figured out. They could be in trouble. I mean, you guys talked about the Ravens. I mean, the Ravens could lose and keep losing a couple games because I don't think the Bengals situation is good. I don't think the Steelers situation is good, and the Browns stink. You know, 9-8 could win you this division. 9-8 can win you this division.
That's a good point, man, because you got like the two best defenses that everyone thinks about, the Ravens and Steelers. They're not looking great right now. They're letting anyone score. Browns have a really good defense. They just
They
can't score. So they might be a little more competitive than we thought they were. And Bengals are just a mess without Joe Burrow. So like, can they just float around to win the division? You're right. I thought that was the toughest division, but it might be like the most like what the fuck division right now. It's crazy.
I'll say like as it typically is in September, there's a lot of like big offensive stuff going on. The weather's good, you know. Once late fall starts coming, we start playing some like nasty games in Pittsburgh, Cleveland, and
I want it.
And in Baltimore, like the offense is generally a little less high fly, you know, defenses show out a little more banged up on the offensive lines and things like that, where you don't have. So, I mean, I think it's still there for Pittsburgh. I don't think it's Super Bowl probably worthy, but I don't know if we ever think the Steelers were the threat to the Super Bowl coming out of that division. But I think it's a patented like Tomlin's going to get above by 100. Okay, I'm sorry.
can they win a playoff game?
I'm always hoping. I the Metcalf and Rodgers thing though. That's looking kind of nice.
I mean, the Steelers got a tough schedule, guys. I mean, I'm looking at it. I mean, they got Minnesota, they got the bye, they get Cleveland at home. But then at Cincinnati, Green Bay, Indianapolis, Chargers, Cincinnati, Chicago, Buffalo, Baltimore. I mean, it's tough, dude.
It's tough, yeah.
So they got to get their act together quick, man. They do.
Dude, it's a tough schedule.
I mean, right now they would flip-flop with the 49ers to the Buffalo Bills schedule right now if they had a do-over.
Oh, hell yeah. 100%. 100%. Dude, I didn't even look at their schedule. Jeez, looks rough. I do want to go when they visit the Chargers, though. It's right around my birthday. Be nice. All right. We didn't talk about Kansas City and Giants, but I don't think we got to too much, right? It is what it is. Russell's bye-bye. Rookie starts this week against a tough Chargers team. They couldn't wait an extra week before they face the Saints or anything? Or
I was a little surprised by that because
no Jameis.
That's the other thing, and I wanted to talk about a little bit of talk about like where the trade rumors came up about Jameis going to Cincinnati, and man, do I want to see that.
Ooh, I was going to bring that up. I haven't heard that.
Yeah, it came out. It was last week, and I thought they were totally going to pull this trigger because it was coming off the Russell Wilson, you know, 400 plus yard passing game, and I was like, what do we need a third, you know, third string quarterback with Jameis? We're not even dressing him out because Jackson Dart's the backup. And man, you give Jameis, you know, Higgins and Chase, and you know, I mean, there may be 2-3 turnovers, but man, he's going to be chucking the ball. I mean, that's a show I want to see.
Dude, he's getting at least 4 touchdowns, 2 interceptions, 400 yards. That'd be pretty fun.
He's going back to his Tampa days, 5,000 yards passing, leading the league in interceptions and passing yards.
30 touchdowns, 30 interceptions. That's like the weirdest stat. Yeah, 5,000 yards or something like that, right? That's crazy.
I know Cincinnati believes in Jake Browning and stuff, but man, like I just think you kick the tires on that even a little more now. I don't know if the Giants holding all three of these guys is the answer, but the going to Jackson Dart again was a thing too. It's like everyone in New York wants him to start. I don't know if it's the right thing because
the Chargers.
Yeah, the Chargers. I would have maybe waited for the Saints, but like you guys said earlier, Saints not exactly easy playing in New Orleans. And so, is there a right time to have him do this game? I if you're going to go away from Russ, I don't know why you're not giving the Jameis the start at this point too. So I think saving him for a trade or something. Cause yeah, I'm more rooting for the Jameis going to Cincinnati, to be honest with you.
Yeah. I think Jameis to Cincinnati makes sense. I've seen some people float out even Russell Wilson going to Cincinnati, but that's not going to happen.
It's not happening.
I mean, this isn't a favorable matchup for Dart, but it's a home game. The home crowd wants to see him. So it's better to play him at home in an opener versus on the road. I just prefer to see my quarterback have a home opening game versus the road one, even though it's against a tough defense that he's going to give him some problems and the concerns. And the crowd wants it, right? I mean, we all heard the game on Sunday night. All you heard was boos. Boo, boo, boo. And then when Dart would come out, he would just hand the ball off. Nothing but cheers. The crowd wants to see him. I don't know if he's going to look great against the Chargers. It's a tough defense to look good against. Hopefully they got more than just, hey, neighbors, you go deep and we'll throw it up. But Dart looked good in preseason, but that was preseason. I think he'll have some – I think he's going to look a lot like a J.J. McCarthy did, where he'll have moments where you go, okay, yeah, I think this guy can make some throws and play.
You mean that one quarter?
He's going to probably throw like a couple interceptions where it's like, oh, that's a rookie mistake against a veteran complicated defense that the Chargers have.
Chargers are going to New York. I think that's a possibility that they can kind of trip up. They've had 3 really close games. You know, it's a long season, so it could be one.
It is. It's the old trap spot in the NFL.
It
traveling
could be a
west
trap
to
game,
east.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
We'll see on the Lions this week. That'll be really fun to cover. Any last comments on week 3 in the NFL? We actually covered a lot more than we usually do. Hour and 20 minutes. Wow. You guys are impressive.
You get us going, Rom. We just, you know, we're talking football. We're chatting it up. I the blocked field goals, just the craziness
fun.
Of the witching hour at that moment, what was going on at the end of those games. I think it was a week to kind of remember what you're getting when you're getting down to it. So some interesting things that affected lines and some of the bets, and definitely you guys were the bigger winners early on in the game. But I think you remember, but you know, you're already on to the next week. The storylines change in the NFL very quickly. We talked about the biggest losers, you know, some of the biggest winners, and you know, there's probably be some unexpected stuff coming up. And when you get to the NFL, like injuries start taking place and all these things start managed. Quarterbacks are going down. And then you'll have like, you know, your Niners over there, Rome. Like, I know all your Niner fans are all freaking out, but you know, they're going to luck themselves into like 10, 11 wins with their schedule they're at, and you're not going to know how they did it. So,
yeah.
And there's a chance that they can get a lot of guys back too at the end of the season, kind of like start forming out like that week 16 mark.
Well, we didn't even touch about it, Rome. They did lose Nick Bosa for the season when ACL.
They did. Yeah. That kind of takes
and
away like their outside
defensively,
edge.
Defensively, they're. You know, they've let a lot of guys go. Greenlaw, he's gone to Denver. The safety's gone to Denver.
They let someone go to Jacksonville.
they've let a lot of guys go. Bosa was kind of, you know, the guy. I mean, Sal has done a great job. He's been a great defensive coordinator in this league and running defenses, you know, touching back on last things. I mean, yeah, the blocked field goals Jason mentioned. I was like Aaron Glenn seeing all those blocked field goals. I had my little juke dance going because we've got a lot of backdoor covers with those Jets coming through on the 6.5, the Eagles on the 3.5. So it was wild, the NFL. And, you know, as Jason said it best, next question I'm on to week 4, so let's get ready for it, because week 3's in the past, and hopefully we can all get a above 500 week here in the pros. I mean, college we're doing good, but the pros have been they've been kicking our ass.
Yeah,
been kicking our ass. Oh yeah, be sure to listen to our podcast on YouTube. Subscribe, give us a rating on Apple Podcasts. Give us a 5-star rating. We need more ratings, more reviews. You guys share with anyone you guys know. We need more ratings to boost up the visibility. Same thing on Spotify. Give us a 5-star rating as well. And catch some clips coming out this episode. Later this week, we have Games of the Week, Aaron's Week 5 Games of the Week for college football. We may have a special guest for that pod or for our NFL Lions that comes out after that. Both clips, college football, we'll get its own episode. NFL Lines will get its own episode, both up on YouTube. So be on the lookout for that. Source from the Sofa, we are out.